Good evening, everyone. Welcome to this live event with Congressman Faso. I'd like to turn it over to the Congressman.
Good evening. This is Congressman John Faso, and thank you for joining our live telephone town hall. I'm speaking to you from our office in Washington, D.C., in the Longworth House Office Building. It has certainly been an eventful few weeks and recently in Congress, and we're working on a number of issues that I'm sure will be of interest. And the purpose of this call is to allow you to ask me questions that are on your mind on issues of concern that hopefully I will be able to answer satisfactorily for you. I also wanted to tell you that we are going to be doing a little survey of the listeners on our call, and I wanted to, the question is going to be, and it's on the immigration issue, so if you have the if you can listen for a second, I'll give you what the question is going to be, and you could be asked at the end for a yes or no, or unsure on the answer. And the question is, do you support a compromise immigration plan now under consideration in the House that would give approximately 1.8 million people brought here illegally to the United States as children prior to 2007 a path to citizenship in exchange for completing the building of a border wall and added border security and an end to chain migration and an end to the diversity lottery visa system? Again, the question is, do you support a compromise immigration plan now under consideration in the House of Representatives, which would give approximately 1.8 million people brought here illegally to the United States as children prior to 2007, that's the so-called DACA population, give them a path to citizenship in exchange for completing the building of a border wall and added border security included with an end to chain migration and an end to the diversity visa lottery. Now, on this question, you should press 1 for yes, 2 for no, and 3 for unsure. And I can repeat that question later on in the call. The other important thing I wanted to tell you is that if you want to get in the queue, you press star 3 to get in the queue to answer, to ask a question, and we will get to you. I'm going to try to be as quick and succinct as possible so I can get to as many of your questions as I possibly can. And so with that, I'm going to ask John Billings, our Chief of Staff, to give us the first caller.
Okay, Congressman, we have Eileen from Chatham. Eileen?
Hello, Eileen. Go ahead.
Hi. I have two questions. One is about immigration. And one, I don't understand why you didn't make a big stink about it when Jeff Sessions and so and all the others start saying zero tolerance and splitting up children, you know, 6-8 weeks ago. But I want to know, you know, what you're going to require in the immigration bill if it ever gets passed. I know that one didn't pass, and they postponed the other one.
Yeah.
And I know it probably won't make it through Senate. And, you know, it's disconcerting that, you know, you're not fighting for people. It seems like you're fighting for corporations. And you know, it seems like a lot of people are making money, but not the, you know, the lower-end people. You know,
well,
just lots of people getting up rich off of it.
Well, let me answer your question, Eileen. Number one, my voice has been very clear right from the start. In fact, I did a recording. You can find this on my weekly email or on my website with NPR about 3 weeks ago, and I very clearly stated my opposition to the separation of children at the border. Little children should not be separated from their parents, even though the parents come into the country illegally. That's been my position right from the get-go, and I've said this repeatedly, actually. The second thing is that the legislation that is actually going to potentially be considered in the House tomorrow, which I support, that legislation would, among other things, clarify the law to make it clear that an illegal immigrant who is detained at the border, that illegal immigrant is someone that should not, if they have children with them, they should not be separated from their children, that they will be detained in a facility that is not a prison or anything like that, but some type of shelter so that those individuals can be with their children during the pendency of their case. So I've been very clear about that right from the start.
But it was my understanding that, you know, in the previous administrations, they only separated the children when they were endangered. I forget the day Mr. Sessions said that we're zero tolerance and we're going to split up the kids as a deterrent. So, you know, it's a policy created by the president, enforced by the DHS secretary, and Mr. Sessions that's causing all this. And now you're going to have to write a bill around something that, you know, before was being handled. And now you're make bills that say they're forcing, so you, now you're like kind of like trumping Sessions saying you can't do this anymore.
Well, that's great
to stop him because he's an evil-minded person, but he's not very Christian either. He hates immigrants and he wants a white society. I understand that.
I don't agree with a lot of your characterizations, but let me just say this. I realize there's a lot of emotion around this, but I've said right from the get-go that I don't agree with the policy of separating children. Number two, in the Obama administration, there was a case, it's called the Flores case, that actually related to this very issue. The Obama administration had a policy where the illegal immigrant with their children were detained in some type of federal detention center that was set up. The Flores decision said that you couldn't keep the children in that facility for longer than 20 days. And so that was something that actually was done during the Obama administration. And unfortunately, these matters often take longer than 20 days, which is one of the things that we should be trying to address. So the bottom line is that the president belatedly yesterday issued an executive order reversing the administration's earlier decision about separation of children and parents, and I'm glad they did it. I called for them to do this, but this is a matter that has been very contentious, but it didn't start here. It actually started more than a dozen years ago, and if you go back and you actually research this and you look and you understand the Flores case that was brought during the Obama administration, this is one of those issues that has been around for quite a while. I disagreed with the way in which Attorney General Sessions and President Trump handled this. Fortunately, they've reversed course under a lot of pressure, and I was one of those voices that said they should reverse this policy. So I appreciate your call. John, who is next on the queue?
Yes, and to remind everyone, press *3 if you'd like to ask a question of the congressman. You'll be put in the queue. Our next caller is Gary from Malden Bridge. Gary, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Gary.
Hi, John. We just received notice from our national office. I'm president, as you know, of the New York State Rural Air Carriers. We received notice that President Trump has proposed privatizing the Postal Service. And we'd certainly like you to oppose that position. We'd appreciate if you would speak on it a bit.
Let me take a look at it. I, frankly, have not seen that proposal, and I certainly have been a strong supporter of the Postal Service. So I will take a look at it and be happy to let you know whether or not there's any actual proposal in this regard, because I have not heard it. I've been happy to meet with the representatives of the letter carriers in my office here on any number of occasions, including just recently. So please, if you stay on the line, maybe our staff can grab your contact information, and we will be happy to respond to you. Again, if anyone's on the wants to get in the queue, hit *3, and we'll get to your question. John Billings, who's next on the call?
We have Jim from Walton. Jim, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Jim.
Hey, I'm a firm supporter of yours. I agree with what you said on the immigration, but what I'm wondering where do you stand on these sanctuary cities?
I'm not in favor of sanctuary cities, and I think that really the question comes down to this. If someone is arrested and they're in a and really they're in county jail, so that's those the lockups in our district. If someone is in the county jail under the jurisdiction of the sheriff, there's not a single sheriff in our district that would refuse a lawful detainer request from federal authorities when they become aware that someone is illegally in the country and they have committed some type of crime or they're accused of committing a crime. So I think it's very important. Local law enforcement that I'm aware of all throughout our district and around our state and most for the most part around the country, they do not engage in inquiries of people on suspicion of that you're maybe in the country illegally. They want people who are witnesses potentially to crime to come forward. They don't want someone to be dissuaded or afraid of coming forward if they are not in the country legally, if that person is a witness to a crime or if they've been a victim of a crime. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a situation where someone has committed a crime or is accused of committing a crime and the federal authorities, the immigration authorities, become aware that this individual is in the county lockup, and they issue a detainer request to the local authorities. And in every county in our district, those requests are being followed. Most of the sanctuary city movement that you hear is really fluff and for show, frankly. It is not for actually dealing with these circumstances. But I think in cities like New York and San Francisco, they are actively opposing efforts to of federal authorities to execute valid detainer requests on those cities. And I don't support that. I think it's a mistake, and I think the federal and local law enforcement do need to work together. But thank you for your call, Jim, and thanks for your comments from Delaware County. John Billings, anyone who wants to get on this call, just hit *3, and we will get to it. And who's next in the queue?
Our next call is from Ann in Ankrum. Ann, are you there?
Ann,
yes,
in Ankrum. Ann in Ankrum.
Yep.
How are you, Ann?
I'm okay, thank you. How are you?
I'm well, thanks.
Good. My question is regarding, I was on another of your calls a few weeks ago, and you were talking about the SNAP program and the training that would be offered to recipients so that to help them find employment. How would that be paid for? And is there ultimately a benefit to those who are employed and paying taxes to all of this?
So again, thank you for the call, and thanks for the question. We actually just passed earlier today the Farm Bill, which about a month ago had been sidelined on an extraneous issue. Today it passed in the House of Representatives. In the Farm Bill, the SNAP program or food stamp program is a major component of that. And I support food assistance for people who are needy, who are disabled, who are elderly, children, people that are down on their luck, or people who are just poor. At the same time, there are a few million people that are receiving SNAP benefits who are able-bodied, who could be working, who are not currently in the workforce. And we're in the enviable situation in the United States today where we have 6.7 million jobs posted as wanted, help wanted ads and help wanted jobs out there that are going begging. And we have about 6 million people who are classified as unemployed. We actually have many more people who dropped out of the workforce. And the idea is to try to get able-bodied people the skills and the training and the workforce readiness to get them into the workforce. So the SNAP proposal, and the bells you're hearing behind me, the buzzer, is a notice that the House is going out of session. We've been out of session on votes, and we were just doing the House was in session for special order speeches where members will come forward and make speeches on topics they're interested in. You may have seen this if you've seen it on TV, but that buzzer is a signal that the House is now going out of session. So back to the SNAP program. The effort is to get those able-bodied people in the workforce or into a training program. The monies would go to the states from the federal government. We are not really saving any money in the SNAP program because of this. Any savings, because people are moving off the rolls into the workforce, we're trying to apply that to state and local workforce training efforts, apprenticeship programs. And these would be already existing programs for the most part, and they're often run by state and local governments, or they're run on behalf of state and local governments by nonprofit organizations. So there are ample opportunities out there. The big issue we're going to have, Ann, and I appreciate your call about this, the big issue we're going to have is where people don't have, and they live in a rural area like Ankrum, and say the job is up in Kinderhook, where I live, how do they get there? There's no public transportation to speak of in a lot of our districts. So there will be an opportunity for transportation services to be offered, but that's something that's going to be up to the state to offer. But the federal government is going to give the state additional resources to help them with their job placement and training programs. So it's not a simple solution, but it's one where we're trying to get people into the workforce, because if they're working, that's the best path out of poverty and the best path to self-sufficiency. I remind everyone, star 3, if you have a question. Please, John Billings, the next question.
We have Mark in Cobleskill. Mark?
Hi, Mark.
Good evening, Congressman. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you.
My question is, why are we only doing a border wall along the Mexican-American border? Why aren't we doing one with Canada?
Well, the reason is that we've got a 3,000-mile-long border with Canada. We do have areas where we need better security, and the legislation that we're going to vote on tomorrow would actually provide additional resources for points of entry and for more biometric screening of people. And a lot of the people that overstay visas, half of them come into the country illegally. So half of the people who are in our country illegally today had a visa, and they initially came into the country legally. So there's going to be much more effort on both the northern and the southern border, but frankly, the biggest source of illegal immigration is not coming from Canada. It's coming actually from our southern border. So we're going to make efforts to enhance that. So I very much appreciate that call. And star 3, if you have another call, who's next?
We now have Jay from Canajoharie. Jay, are you on the line?
Yes,
I am. Jay.
How are you?
Good. Go ahead.
It is very warm here in beautiful Montgomery County, right by the Mohawk River.
Ah, very good. I was just out in St. Johnsville last week for a FFA, a Future Farmer of America celebration at the St. Johnsville High School.
That's great. Congressman Fassel, if and when Congress decides on passing an infrastructure bill, will places without natural gas service, like the village of St. Johnsville and also Sullivan County, be eligible for monetary assistance in such a bill? Does this fall in the infrastructure category?
Well, most of the, Jay, it's a good question, and you're right. We have areas in our district that are energy starved and do not have access to natural gas. And there are other areas in our district, like Oneonta, where there isn't enough capacity to deliver natural gas. So many businesses and industries, and in fact, I think the colleges in Oneonta only have intermittent supply of natural gas because the utility doesn't have enough capacity to deliver it. So this is an ongoing trouble and a problem that businesses have and families have, because if you don't have natural gas, you're stuck paying for propane or heating oil unless you have a completely renewable system at home. But most people don't, and natural gas is a heck of a lot cheaper. It's about, you'd only be paying about 35 to 40% of what you'd be paying for heating oil or propane. So the bill that we'd be working on, frankly, we're stymied right now. I'm hopeful we can still get an infrastructure bill, but it's mostly going to be geared at transportation, roads and bridges and things like broadband. But I do agree with you, natural gas expansion would be a great idea for communities that want to have added service. So that's something I can definitely take a look at. I appreciate you raising it because it's an important issue. And a lot of our communities, like Delhi, Kinderhook, where I live, the village of Chatham, have no access to natural gas. Schoharie, the village of Schoharie doesn't have it. Village of Middleburg. So there are a lot of communities in throughout our 11-county district that do not have access that would like it, actually. So it's a good suggestion, and I'll definitely take a look at seeing if we can include some incentives for that in any infrastructure bill. But broadband and roads and bridges, transportation projects, that's going to be the major focus of any infrastructure legislation. Star 3 for any calls that you want to get in the queue.
Our next question is going to come from Peter in Scaticook. Peter, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Peter.
Hi, John. Nice to hear from you.
Yes, good to hear from someone from Rensselaer County.
Oh, we love it out here. So my question is related to net neutrality. We recently had the FCC overrule that we can't have access to information at the same speeds from different websites and that providers can pay for these internet fast lanes. That really seems like that we get diverted now. So I want to know what we're doing to protect our access to good information.
So I support a free and open internet. I don't support any blocking or channeling where internet providers can pick and choose which customers are being able to get access on a preferable basis. Everyone should have the same access. And I think this applies, the important thing, I'm hopeful that we can pass legislation, actually, that would make it broader than where the net neutrality issue was with the Federal Trade Commission, and actually make it so that it applies not just to the telecommunications companies, but also applies to the internet companies like Google and Facebook and companies like Netflix, et cetera. I don't want to see, and I'm very concerned that a lot of these companies are violating privacy of people or using data and information about their customers in an unwarranted way. So I would like to see this broaden to cover not just the telecom companies and the cable companies, but also the Googles and the Netflixes and those kind of companies in this process. So a free and open internet is really important. I want to see more investment, and I think investment now is starting to pick up in this sphere. Really important. I had a trip, a congressional delegation trip to South Korea, where recently, 2 months ago, where we were talking to them, mostly the government and to experts about the issue of denuclearization on the Korean Peninsula. But one of the days we were there on that five-day trip, we were talking to South Korean businesses, and it's amazing the expansion of the technology. In many respects, they are ahead of us in South Korea in terms of the infusion of technology into the daily lives of individuals and businesses. And I want to make sure we have a free and open internet. So I'm with you on this, and I think it's really critical that we make sure the companies are doing this, but make sure that all the players in the market, not just the telecoms, not just AT&T and Verizon, but all of the players are protecting the privacy rights of people and not blocking or channeling the internet in ways that disadvantage consumers. It's really key for our businesses and individuals. So, John Billings, who's the next caller?
Our next caller is going to be Steve from Ghent. Steve, are you there?
Yes.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, John. How are you? I met you up at the Catholic Church, the dinner they had there.
Which Catholic
I'm
Church?
Disabled. In Valencia, I'm sorry.
Oh, it's St. John's. Okay.
Yeah, for the Stride
sure.
Warriors.
Yeah, yeah,
which I belong to, and my question is, we have a thing now. It's VA Choice, and what's been happening is we can't get into the doctors within a 30-day period. So if we're not able to do that, they give us what's called VA choice, and they cover us to go to the outside doctors.
Right.
Which I had to do having a neurologic problem. And I was worked up on the outside by my primary care, who then went to give me a referral for a neurosurgery consult, but he couldn't make the referral because he does not work for the VA.
Yeah.
So he has no access to their computer system and kind of put things backwards. So I'm now back on the burner again. Are they moving forward to, you know, if they're going to offer this VA choice, are they going to make it so that an outside provider can even fax? My doctor was willing to fax the neurology department all the information that they needed for me to have a consult up in at Albany at Stratton, the VA.
Yeah. So Steve, we have recently enacted legislation that is intended to streamline this process and make it easier for people to access. You're getting a little interference there. I don't know why.
Yeah, Deb, we got the train going by.
Oh, okay. That's in Ghent, not in Washington. Okay. So,
right, yeah.
The bottom line is that we have enacted some legislation that's going to update and modernize all of these programs for the veterans. It's critically important that we accommodate these needs, and we're trying to make sure that those kind of impediments that a private doctor who was referred because you couldn't get into the VA system within that 30-day window, that private doctor has the capacity to refer you further. So what I want to do is also take a look at this question for you specifically. I would encourage you to call our Kinderhook office at 518-610-8133. The Kinderhook office, again, the number is 518-610-8133. And we can look specifically at your particular issue now, because some of these reforms I mentioned aren't going to take place until 2019, but you have an immediate issue. So give us a call there, and we will follow up for you. Okay.
Okay. Congressman, our next call is Stephen from Deposit. Stephen?
Yes. Hi, Congressman.
Hi, Steve.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was calling to ask if you think there really was going to be enough votes in the House of Representatives and the Senate to get this immigration bill passed.
Yes.
You
what
do?
Was your question?
I'm sorry. Do you think there's going to be enough votes in the Congress to be able to get this bill passed on immigration?
Well, I'll tell you the truth, it's up in the air. In fact, before I came back to my office to do this call, I left a party conference that was taking place in the basement of the Capitol. That's where the Republicans meet. The Democrats meet in a particular, in a different area of the Capitol complex. And we were right in the midst of a very long discussion, a lot of questions and answers that members have. I'm hopeful that it can pass because it does some important things. And here's the other thing. It's very important for us to pass a bill, not just to pass a bill in the House, but to pass a bill that could potentially pass the Senate and get signed by the President. Otherwise, this is just an exercise in futility.
Right.
And the legislation that I'm supporting is now, the President has said he will support and he would sign. And it does a couple of things. One, it has a significant border security aspect, including the funding that he's looking for to build the border security wall that he wants. And that is not a wall from the Gulf of Mexico to the Pacific Ocean. It's actually in very discrete places along the border where Border Patrol has difficulty in having operational control of the border because it's just too vast to cover. But the second aspect of what is in this bill are some significant immigration reforms to end the so-called diversity visa lottery, where we give out 50,000 green cards to people every year on the basis of nothing other than they were picked at random to come into the country. Mm-hmm. And we're moving to more of a system that is based upon skills and abilities that people have, which is like most other countries in the world have, a system which emphasizes merit and skills that we need in this country. And we clearly need people that can fill many of the jobs that we have empty, and people that bring specific skills into our country. I've long thought that people that come over here to get PhDs in mechanical engineering or other very important specialties, that those people should have the ability to stay in the United States if they'd like. And the third thing that we would do is we would finally address the more than a million people. It's actually closer to 1.8 million people who were brought here as children before 2007 by their parents illegally into the country. But most of these people, and I've met many of them, know nothing else but the United States. And really, they are as American as you and I are. And so it's very important that these people have a shot at staying in the country and ultimately becoming citizens, because they know no other country than the United States. I've met with hundreds of people in this category, and I can tell you that some of them are extraordinarily capable and fine people. So the system, what it would do, it would say if that person came in before 2007 as a child under 16, they would have a six-year ability to stay in the country, they'd have permission, and then after that 6 years, they would be able to apply for a green card just like anyone else that had been in this immigrant category. We're not creating a special pathway for them. We're creating a system whereby they could then, so long as they are working and they're not haven't violated the law, they could ultimately, and it would probably take 10 or 12 years, become a citizen. But, you know, Congress has just been kicking the can down the road for so many years on this, and I really want to see us solve this problem. And lastly, we would solve this issue of children, minors at the border with illegal immigrants coming in, and we would not separate children from parents. And we would fix the law and override some of these legal opinions that have been impediments to doing this. So on all of those counts, that's the kind of legislation which I think is balanced. We've hammered this out as a compromise. It's not every aspect of it, perhaps I wouldn't agree with, and I wouldn't expect everyone to agree with every aspect of this. But I think on balance, it moves us forward. And it's a bill that the president says he would sign. And again, I'm about how do we move the ball forward and get something into law, not just endlessly debate this, which, frankly, Congress kicks the can down the road. In the year and a half I've been here, I've been very frustrated by the fact that a lot in Congress would prefer just to argue about something and never solve it. And there are people on the Republican side and people on the Democratic side that bring that. I would note also, I was ranked as the 18th most bipartisan member of Congress for working with the people on the other side of the aisle out of 435 members of Congress. And I'm proud of that because, you know, I'm at a point in my life, and I think people in our district want us to solve problems. They don't want us to just endlessly debate these things. So, Steve, I really appreciate that call. I love Deposit. I love going down there. And I appreciate you making that call for us here tonight. John, who's next on our queue?
Our next caller will be Bob from Hamden. Bob, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hello, Bob.
Hello, Congressman. Good to talk with you. My concern is about the tariffs. I know, as you know, as a member of the Agriculture Committee, we've probably had the best export environment in the last year we've had in the last 10 years. And the appointment of Undersecretary McKinney has been fantastic for growing agricultural exports. However, when I see China put on 25% retaliatory tariffs, it concerns me because then that opens the market to our competitors from other parts of the world to move into countries like China and to undercut us And once we've lost that market, we may not ever get it back. And
yeah.
So I was just asking that the Agriculture Committee and any other committees that you're on that can help us, that we really be cautious about allowing, giving our trading partners the opportunity to hit us with tariffs, which
yeah.
then opens up their markets to our competition.
Yeah. Bob, thank you for that call. I am actually very concerned about the policies of the Trump administration on this whole trade issue. I think the focus really should be on the theft of intellectual property by China and the kind of the restrictive and abusive conditions that the Chinese put on U.S. businesses doing business in China. But something the president said, I have to say, I just do not agree with at all. When he said trade wars are easy to win, history shows that trade wars bring unintended consequences, and they're actually create a lot of collateral damage for innocent parties in our economy. Dairy, for instance, 40% of our dairy exports go to Mexico. We have a real problem with Canada. Canada has a very restrictive dairy market, and they're unfair to us and unfair to our dairy farmers. But by and large, if you look at the totality of the U.S.-Canada trading relationship, we actually have a big trade surplus with Canada. And Canada imports more from the U.S. than they do from China, Japan, and England combined. I've met with more than probably now a dozen businesses in our district over the last 2 months that are experiencing significant increases in steel and aluminum costs for the manufactured products that they make. And these manufactured products run the gamut, anywhere from machines that crush glass to deck and rooftop furniture like pergolas and rooftop flower pots that are high in high demand from one manufacturer in our district for new condos and apartment buildings in New York City. So there are a lot of collateral damages that can occur on this trade issue, and I've encouraged the administration, and some of my colleagues are as well, to really be much more cautious about how we're approaching this. Yes, I agree with the president. We want to have fair trade, but we've got to do it in a way where we create allies rather than adversaries. It's very difficult for us to fight a trade war on all these multiple fronts. I would like to see us focus on the real concern, which is the theft of intellectual property by China against our industries. And Bob, I'm glad you raised this because agriculture is always the first industry to really feel this impact because the U.S. is an enormous exporter of agricultural products. So I'm urging the administration to be much more judicious about how they're approaching this trade issue. And I think we need to look at some legislation maybe because the Constitution gives the Congress the authority on matters of trade. And successive Congresses over the last 30, 40 years have given away our power to Democrat and Republican presidents. And I think we really need to reexamine some of that. So I appreciate that question. This is a very complicated issue, but it's also one that I can tell you from talking to so many businesses and manufacturers in our district, there's a real concern from small business manufacturers on what the ramifications of these trade policies could be for them and the trade repercussions from the kind of tit-for-tat that is going on that Bob raises on our agricultural producers. That's a real concern. So I thank you for that call. It's a big, big issue. It's controversial, but it's a tough one. Who is the next caller? And if you want to get in this queue, we still have about 10 more minutes. Star 3.
Congressman, we're going to take one of the online questions because people are participating online. And Teresa wants to know, how does the farm bill specifically help small farms, and how will the farm bill benefit nutritionally challenged children?
That's a very good question. Well, we have a big farm-to-table movement in our district. We have a lot of small farmers. What we're doing through conservation programs, we're helping those farmers with better farming practices. And I put some an amendment into the Farm Bill based on some legislation that I had sponsored that will allow the government, the Agriculture Department, to better assess the conservation practices that are most efficient and actually make sure that tax dollars are being spent in the best way. One of the other things that I've done is I've put a bill in provisions in this Farm Bill that will work to improve the integrity of organic agriculture. I've got a lot of support from the Organic Farming Trade Association and the organic producers because we're going to beef up the ability of the Agriculture Department to monitor and track products that are labeled organic but may not be. And this is particularly a problem with imports that come into the United States. There's a lot of fraud that takes place internationally, and we want to make sure that organic products are protected. The other thing that we've done is we've modified the so-called margin protection program for dairy, and we've improved the ability of dairy farmers to get more return from this. Basically, it's an insurance program to make sure that if the cost of production, like the cost of feed, is out of line with what they're getting as a return, that they have some kind of insurance program to help shelter them and cushion the low commodity prices that they're now getting for milk. On school nutrition, one of the things that I've done right from the get-go is I've petitioned the Ag Department to allow flavored milk into the school lunch program because a lot of kids were only able, they were only permitted to buy 1% milk, and a lot of kids simply threw it out. I've talked to a lot of food service officials at our school districts, and they welcome the ability to get flavored milk into the school lunch program, and that's more nutritious. And actually, I'm fighting to get whole milk back into the school lunch program because the studies now show that whole milk has the right combination of nutrition and fats that are good for kids. Growing children need that kind of energy, and they need that kind of nutrition. So I'm very big on promoting our dairy industry. So there's a lot in this bill that is going to assist local farmers with their crop insurance programs that are really important for a lot of our farmers in the Hudson Valley and the Catskills. And I'm very hopeful that we can get a good farm bill through a conference committee with the Senate and get something to the president by the end of September, which is the time of the expiration of the current farm bill. So that would be a good accomplishment for us. So, and I've also been very big on promoting farmers markets and making sure we have programs in the farm bill that improve the ability of people to access, especially if they're poor, farmers markets and the nutritional products that are available at our farmers markets. I love going to farmers markets. Trouble is, I tend to eat a lot of those products on the cuff right away. John, do we have time for some more calls?
Yes, we have Tom in Sprakers. Tom, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
Hello, Tom.
Hey, good evening, Congressman. I appreciate you taking the call, and I appreciate your efforts.
Thank you.
My question has to do with the opiate crisis that everybody talks about.
Yep.
I am currently housing a young lady who's a daughter of a good friend who is receiving treatment in Amsterdam, New York. Now, I'm outside of Canajoharie, and it's about a 15-mile trip to Amsterdam, New York. She gets a free cab ride every day, and that cab comes out of Troy, New York. And that guy has two patients. And one's at my house, and one's in St. Johnsville.
Oh, my goodness.
So that cab driver, pardon me?
That's quite a trip.
That cab driver is driving roughly 120, 130 miles round trip to take two people for treatment that's about a 20-mile ride at the most from St. Johnsville.
Yeah.
Now, are we spending all this money? And I was the guy that provided the transportation in the beginning. And when you sit in the treatment parking lot the only cars that come and go are all paid cabs.
Yeah. This,
and
this
the
is,
heroin addict pays for nothing, and yet a taxpayer who has worked their entire life can't get a free cab ride anywhere out here.
Yeah. And Tom, I don't want to cut you off, but I think I got the gist of your question, and I want to make sure we can get a couple more in here. I'm going to talk to Mike McMahon, who's the Social Services Commissioner in Montgomery County, and report your concern to him. The Medicaid transportation, this is paid for by the Medicaid system, and I'm afraid I've heard a number of instances where this Medicaid transportation is used in ways that are not compatible with taxpayer efficiency, and certainly a cab company coming from Troy to go out to St. Johnsville to bring someone to Amsterdam, that doesn't make any sense. So I appreciate you raising the question. I'm going to raise it with officials locally in Montgomery County who may have some discretion over this, but I appreciate your bringing it to my attention. Who's next, John?
Our next call is Rachel in Delhi. Rachel?
Rachel, go ahead.
Okay. I feel as though I'm being held hostage with regard to the border wall. I feel that if President Trump is so obsessed with the wall, that unless Congress agrees to pay for it, a campaign promise the president made by stating Mexico would pay for it when they clearly stated they wouldn't. So if this wall doesn't get approved and he doesn't win, because clearly for him everything seems to be all about winning, what is going to happen? And why right now are 2,600 children still in internment camps, places after signing the executive order that he said was not allowed because Congress was supposed to be in charge, then it was an executive order? Why are they still there? Why are they going hungry? Why are they being held naked and handcuffed and only getting fresh air for 2 hours a day? I lost 117 members of my family in internment camps during the Holocaust. And the language used to describe these camps is too eerily similar. There's research that discusses the lifelong trauma of being in these camps. How are you not standing at the border protecting these children? This is not a Democratic issue or a Republican issue. It is an issue of our common humanity. I'm a lifelong Democrat, but I voted for Chris Gibson, the third-ranked bipartisan member of Congress, and I'm very proud of my votes for Congressman Gibson. And in Chris's Time Union column this past week, he quoted John F. Kennedy, writing, when John F. Kennedy was asked how he found the strength and courage to be such a hero during his service as a young Navy lieutenant during World War II, he humbly stated, it was involuntary, they sank my boat.
There are
babies being kept from their mothers, babies with other children changing their diapers. So what I ask you, Congressman Faso, is what does it take for you to be a hero? What sinks your boat if children are being taken from their parents and held naked in shackles? How is your boat kept afloat?
Well, I appreciate your passion about this. I feel very strongly about this as well. And like I said, right from the get-go, I said I disagreed with this policy. I'm glad that the administration changed their policy yesterday, but I also believe that we should pass legislation which clarifies the law in this regard, and that's something that I support as well. I don't believe that I have not heard of any child being shackled, as you say, but I do want to make sure that these children are quickly reunited with their parents because that's the right thing to do. That's the humanitarian thing to do. And it's we're a better country than separating kids from their parents, especially these little children coming across who are innocent in this regard. So I appreciate your passion, and I definitely am doing everything that I can to make sure that this matter and these is resolved quickly and that these children are quickly reunited with their families.
And we have time for one more call, I think, Congressman. We have Kevin from Germantown. Kevin, are you there?
Yes, right here. Thanks for Thanks for taking my call, Congressman.
Sure.
I'm calling about we need your help here in Germantown and working with the local citizens and Amtrak. in preventing the construction of a fence along the rail lines here in Germantown and south. It would be divisive to the village. It would stop use of the local anchorage. It would affect local businesses.
Yep.
And I received an email from you saying that you were willing to speak to Amtrak because we need your help.
Yeah. Well, Kevin, let me tell you what we've done. We set up a meeting about a month ago now. We brought Amtrak in. Supervisor Bury from Germantown was there, as well as other supervisors from up and down the river towns on the east side of the river in Columbia and Dutchess County. Amtrak has pledged to us that they're going to meet locally with the officials and also with citizens to describe what their plans are. The issue is making sure that the tracks are safe. We've had a number of instances, even locally recently, where I think it was in Castleton, where an individual was killed on the tracks trying to cross to get across to go fishing. And those trains come in some sections of our district at 110 miles an hour, and that train gets on you very, very quickly. So we want to make sure that people have access to the river and that Amtrak does a better job of explaining what they're doing, and that we're working to make sure that we can get this in a place where maybe everyone won't be happy, but where we can satisfy the concerns that citizens and local officials have for access to the river, but also maintaining the safety. You know, I'm on the Transportation Committee and the Rail Subcommittee. There are two to three people killed every single day on tracks in the United States, and it is a big concern. But I've listened loud and clear to the concerns. George Sharp brought it to me, your supervisor did, and others down in Germantown, and we're working to make sure that Amtrak pays attention and works with these local communities. Now, I want to thank everyone for being on this call. If we didn't get to you, I want you to be able to stay on and ask your question, and staff will take your name and address and your inquiry. But I also want to say one more time the question, the little survey question we put together. Do you support a compromised immigration plan which would give approximately 1.8 million people brought illegally into the United States as children prior to 2007, give those DACA people a path to citizenship in exchange for completing the building of a border wall with added border security, ending the chain migration system, and also ending the so-called diversity visa lottery? That is all in the legislation that I've been supporting, that will, I think, may get a vote in the House of Representatives tomorrow. I really do appreciate everyone's time tonight. I appreciate your listening. It's an honor to serve. We are working hard on opioids. I've passed some legislation recently on this, working also very hard on this farm bill. I'm glad we got that done, and working very hard on trying to make sure we can fix this immigration issue and the terrible situation that we've seen just recently with children being separated from their parents at the border. I really do understand how deeply people feel, and I know that some of our callers, like Rachel from Delhi, feel very strongly about it. And I think, frankly, anyone that's a parent, like I am, knows very deeply how harmful and hurtful that would be to be separated from your kids. At the same time, we need to make sure we have border security and that we have operational control of our borders, which clearly we do not have on that southern border, and we haven't had it for quite some time. So I want to thank everyone. I want to thank everyone for taking the time to listen. God bless you. God bless America. Thanks again.